After a heated debate,
we are starting again to continue chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And we have a beautiful girl next to me. And we'll try to find out where we were.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think that's about right. So they just are back in the common room. Shall we get our divination stuff then? Said Harry.
Wait.
What?
I don't remember that.
Well, they just walked back to the common room after they had their little discussion about the unforgivable curses that they saw with.
Mm.
Remember?
Yeah.
Because
I remember Moody.
Yeah.
Getting those.
Yeah, and then after class, they just sort of like chatted about what they saw for a minute. And Neville was really torn up.
Yeah, but then Moody took him to...
Yeah.
Okay, here's... Do you want to know what keeps going on in my head?
Okay.
Okay. I'm like, okay, so I know what the deal is with Moody. Like,
right.
He's really this bad guy.
Right. Why is he doing...
And so I'm like, wow, he's, like, really putting a lot of effort
yeah.
into, like, these things. And, like, kind of hurting his cause a little bit by, like, teaching this stuff.
Right.
And, like... helping Harry, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just like...
His cover's a little too good.
It's a little too good.
He didn't have to do all that, you know?
Yeah. So, okay. And a lot of it's going to come back to bite their side in the ass.
Yep.
Because these kids are learning a lot of stuff that is going to help them defeat
Voldemort. Voldemort.
What?
Okay. Shall we continue?
Yeah.
Okay. They went to the dormitory to fetch their books and charts, to find Neville there alone, sitting on his bed and reading. He looked a good deal calmer than at the end of Moody's lesson, though still not entirely normal. His eyes were rather red.
I'm thirsty.
And if someone heard this?
I just said I was thirsty.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
That sounds dirtier than it was.
You're right, Neville, Harry asked him. Oh, yes, said Neville. I'm fine, thanks. Just reading this book before Sir Moody went to me. He held up the book. Magical Water Plants of the Mediterranean. Apparently, Professor Sprout told Professor Moody, I'm really good at herbology, Neville said. There's a faint note of pride in his voice that Harry had rarely heard there before. He thought I'd like this. Telling Neville what Professor Sprout had said.
Silly, because this is going to get, you know. Do you remember?
Yeah.
What?
It's the thing to go underwater
the gillyweed,
and breathe.
Yeah. I like that word.
Gillyweed. Telling Neville what Professor Sprout had said, Harry thought, had been a very tactful way of cheering Neville up. For Neville very rarely heard that he was good at anything. It was the sort of thing Professor Lupin would have done. Harry and Ron took their copies of Unfogging the Future back down to the common room, found a table, and set to work their predictions for their coming month. An hour later, they had made very little progress, though their table was littered with bits of parchment bearing sums and symbols, and Harry's brain was as fogged as though it had been filled with the fumes of Professor Trelawney's.
All Harry should do is just say,
sure
like, yeah, be like, I'm going to die.
Yep.
My future is bleak.
Grim.
The grim.
I haven't got a clue as to what this lot's supposed to mean, he said, staring down at a long list of calculations. You know, see, this is one of those things that, yes, that would be, you know, good for just BSing his way through this class. But the right thing to do, and the right thing for anyone to do in this class, at the very least Hermione, is be like, okay, look, I'm perfectly happy learning this stuff if you demonstrate that it's true. So what I want you to do, just at the beginning of class for me, is make a couple predictions. They can be fairly simple predictions, but I want there to be something that, if you didn't know, there'd be a decent chance that it'd go the other way. So just make a few predictions, something that puts it past the, you know, 95% mark for probability, and we'll, if you can do that, then I'll take this class, you know? Because it's silly to make these students make predictions if they don't even believe that this stuff is true.
Mm-hmm.
And what better way to believe that it's true than to demonstrate that it's true?
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's... Like, there's not a single student other than Hermione that was the least bit questioning about all this stuff. Harry and Ron are just, like, think it's dumb. and they don't get it. But that's not the same as questioning, you know? And Hermione...
Well, we've already established that Ron and Harry are kind of slackers. Especially, right, and shame, like, on Harry, because he's the one who's, like, right, new to this world and should be all excited about everything.
But, exactly. But what about Hermione? Why did Hermione quit? Why didn't she just question?
I think she did, remember?
Well, no, she was just complaining that it was bogus. But instead of complaining, just say, okay.
No, but if you...
Show
if,
me.
Okay, but the thing is, didn't she say show me at one point?
I don't think she did.
Okay.
She just got more and more fed up talking about how bullshit it was.
Well, then it's not her job necessarily to, like, prove that Trelawney is, like, correct. That's Trelawney's job.
Right, but you'd think one of the students would have done the reasonable thing and be like, why don't you show me? Because every other teacher could demonstrate their powers, right? McGonagall turned into
show
a freaking
me.
Cat the first day, didn't she?
That's true.
You know, what has Trelawney done?
She didn't make a prediction.
Yeah, but only to Harry, and she didn't even believe it was true. Anyways.
If you're in love, show me.
What the heck?
Show me. It's from My Fair Lady.
Oh. You know, said Ron, whose hair was on end because of all the times he had run his fingers through it in frustration. I think it's back to the old divination standby. What, make it up? Yeah, said Ron. Sweet. See, this is what these guys do. It's so dumb. It's like halfway there.
Yep.
It's they think it's dumb, but they don't do anything about it. They just bullshit. So Ron swept the jumble of scrawled notes off the table, dipped his pen in some ink, and started to write. Next Monday, he said as he scribbled, I'm likely to develop a cough, owing to the unlikely conjunction of Mars and Jupiter. He looked up at Harry. You know her. Just put in loads of misery. She'll lap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, said Harry, crumpling up his first attempt and lobbing it over their heads of the group of chattering first years into the fire. Okay, on Monday, I will be in danger of burns. Yeah, you will be, said Ron darkly. We'll be seeing Scroots again on Monday. Okay, Tuesday, lose a treasured possession, said Harry, who was flickering through unfogging the future for ideas. Good one, said Ron, copying it down, because of, Mercury. Why don't you get stabbed in the back by someone you thought was a friend? Yeah, cool, said Harry, scribbling it down, because, Venus is in the 12th house. And on Wednesday, I think I'm gonna have to come off worse in a fight. Ah, I was gonna have a fight. All right, I'll lose a bet. You'll be betting I'll win my fight. They continued making up predictions, which grew steadily more tragic for another hour, while the common room around them slowly emptied as people went to bed. Crookshanks wandered over to them, leapt lightly into an empty chair, and stared inscrutably at Harry, rather as Hermione might look if she knew that they weren't doing their homework properly.
Actually, Hermione would probably be like, go for it.
Yeah, right. No, Hermione would be like, why are you even wasting time making this shit up? Staring around the room, trying to think of a kind of misfortune he hadn't used yet, Harry saw Fred and George sitting together against the opposite wall, heads together, quills out, poring over a single piece of parchment. It was most unusual to see Fred and George hidden away in a corner and working silently. They usually like to be in the thick of things and the noisy center of attention. That's not true. They plan all their shit together by themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Then when they let it go off, they want to be in the center of attention.
Yeah.
Man, so dumb. Of course they're by themselves. There was something secretive about the way they were working on the piece of parchment, and Harry was reminded of how they sat together writing something back at the Burrow. He had thought then it was just another order form for Weasley's wizard Wheezes, but it didn't look like that this time. If it had been, they surely would have let Lee Jordan in on the joke. He wondered whether it had anything to do with entering the Triwizard Tournament. As Harry watched, George shook his head at Fred, scratched out something with his quill, and said in a very quiet voice that nevertheless carried across the deserted room, "No, that sounds like we're accusing him. Got to be careful." Then George looked over and saw Harry watching him. Harry grinned and quickly returned to his predictions. He didn't want George to think that he was eavesdropping. Shortly after that, the twins rolled up their parchment, said goodnight, and went off to bed. Fred and George had been gone 10 minutes or so when the portrait hole opened and Hermione climbed into the common room carrying a sheaf of parchment in one hand and a box whose contents rattled as she walked in the other. Crookshanks arched his back, purring. "Hello," she said. "I've just finished." "So have I," said Ron triumphantly, throwing down his quill. Hermione sat down, laid the thing she was carrying in an empty armchair, and pulled Ron's predictions towards her. "Not going to have a very good month, are you?" she said, sarcastically, as Crookshanks curled up in her lap. "Ah, well, at least I'm forewarned," Ron yawned. "You seem to be drowning twice," said Hermione. "Oh, am I?" said Ron, peering down at his predictions. "I'd better change one of them to be getting trampled by a rampaging hippogriff." "Do you think it's a bit obvious you're making these up?" said Hermione. "How dare you," said Ron in mock outrage. "We've been working like house elves here." Hermione raised her eyebrows. "It's just an expression," said Ron hastily. Harry laid down his quill too, having just finished predicting his own death by decapitation. "What's in the box?" he asked, pointing to it. "Funny you should ask," said Hermione with a nasty look at Ron. She took the lid off and showed them the contents. Inside were about 50 badges, all of different colors, but all bearing the same letters, S-P-E-W. "Spew," said Harry, picking up a badge and looking at it. "What's this about?" "Not spew," said Hermione impatiently. "It's S-P-E-W. Stands for the Society for the Promotion of Elfish Welfare.
You were just having some problems.
Sorry. "Never heard of it," said Ron. "Well, of course you haven't," said Hermione briskly. "I've only just started it." "Yeah," said Ron in mild surprise. "How many members have you got?" "Well, if you two join, 3, said Hermione. "And you think we'll want to walk around wearing badges saying spew, do you?" said Ron. "S-P-E-W, said Ron, said Hermione hotly. "I was going to put stop the outrageous abuse of our fellow magical creatures and campaign for change in their legal status, but it wouldn't fit. So that's the heading of our manifesto." She brandished the sheaf of parchment at them. "I've been researching it throughout thoroughly in the library. Elf enslavement goes back centuries. I can't believe no one's done anything about it before now." "Hermione, open your ears," said Ron loudly. "They like it. They like being enslaves."
"Enslaves?"
"Enslaved." "Our short-term aims," said Hermione, speaking even more loudly than Ron, and acting as though she hadn't heard a word, "are to secure house elf fair wages and working conditions. Our long-term aims include the changing the law about non-wand use, and trying to get an elf into the Department for the Regulation of and Control of Magical Creatures, because they're shockingly underrepresented." "And how do we do all this?" said Harry. "We start by recruiting members," said Hermione happily. "I thought 2 sickles to join, that buys the badge, and the proceeds can fund our leaflet letter. You're our treasurer, Ron. I've got you collecting tin upstairs. And Harry, you're secretary, so you might want to write down everything I'm saying now as a record of our first meeting." She's such a bitch.
She's doing good things.
I know, but why is she making Harry and Ron do all this shit? They don't want it. They're slackers. They just made up all their homework.
That's because she needs to make them do shit, or else they'll never do anything.
Why can't she just be the treasurer? What does she need treasurer? It's so dumb. It's just holding a box with
their money. She's just trying to get them to participate.
It sounds like if you were in, you know, 4th grade and you were, wanted to make a club, you'd do this.
I know, yeah.
I guess they are in 4th grade, aren't they? They're in their 4th year.
Yeah, but that's like they're in 8th grade or something. Like
how old did they start? 13? 12? No. 11? 10? 9?
11?
So they're in 9th grade then.
Oh, okay. The freshmen.
Oh, they should be having sex then.
No, they shouldn't. You didn't even have sex when you were a freshman. You didn't have sex when you were old.
I know. Thanks. Appreciate it.
No problem.
What if someone heard this? Alright.
We gotta wrap this up.
Okay. Let me see how many. Oh, we're just almost done with the chapter. Alright. There was a pause in which Hermione beamed at the pair of them, and Harry sat down, torn between exasperation at Hermione and the amusement at the look on Ron's face. The silence was broken, not by Ron, who in any case looked as though he was temporarily dumbstruck, by a soft tap on the window. Harry looked across the now empty common room and saw, illuminated by the moonlight, a snowy owl perched on the windowsill. "Hedwig!" he shouted, and he launched himself out of his chair and across the room to pull open the window. Hedwig flew inside, soared across the room, and landed on the top of Harry's predictions. "About time," said Harry, hurrying after her. "She's got an answer," said Ron excitedly, pointing at the grubby piece of parchment tied to Hedwig's leg. Harry hastily untied it and sat down to read, whereupon Hedwig fluttered onto his knee, hooting softly. "What does it say?" Hermione asked breathlessly. The letter was very short and looked as though it had been scrawled in a hurry. Harry read it aloud. "Harry, I'm flying north immediately. This news about your scar is the latest in a series of strange rumors that have reached me here. If it hurts again, go straight to Dumbledore. They're saying he's got Mad-Eye out of retirement, which means he's reading the signs, even if no one else is. I'll be in touch soon. My best to Ron and Hermione. Keep your eyes open, Harry.
Serious."
Why so serious?
I was going to say, serious.
Harry looked up at Ron and Hermione, who stared back at him. "He's flying north," Hermione whispered. "He's coming back?" "Dumbledore's reading what signs?" said Ron, looking perplexed. "Harry, what's up?" For Harry had just hit himself in the forehead with his fist, jolting Hedwig out of his lap. "I shouldn't have told him," Harry said furiously. "What are you on about?" said Ron in surprise. "It's made him think he's got to come back," said Harry, now slamming his fist on the table, so that Hedwig landed on the back of Ron's chair, hooting indignantly. "Coming back because he thinks I'm in trouble, and there's nothing wrong with me, and I haven't got anything for you," Harry snapped at Hedwig, who was clicking her beak expectantly. "So you'll have to go up to the owlry if you want food." Hedwig gave him an extremely offended look and took off for the open window, cuffing him around the head with her outstretched wing as she went. Can the owls understand English?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Anyway, go.
"Harry," Hermione began in a pacifying sort of voice. "I'm going to bed," said
that
Harry.
That wasn't the pacifying voice.
You're right.
Harry.
Harry.
That was the... Okay.
Harry.
No!
Harry. All right, anyway, she said it somehow. "I'm going to bed," said Harry shortly. "See you in the morning." Upstairs in the dormitory, he pulled on his pajamas and got into his four-poster, but he didn't feel remotely tired. If Sirius came back and got caught, it would be his, Harry's, fault. Why hadn't he kept his mouth shut? A few seconds' pain, he'd had to blab, if he just had the sense to keep it to himself. Harry's so dumb. He heard Ron come up into the dormitory a short while later, but did not speak to him. For a long time, Harry was staring up at the dark canopy of his bed. The dormitory was completely silent, and as had he been less preoccupied, Harry would have realized that the absence of Neville's usual snores meant that he was not the only one lying awake. And that is the end of chapter 14. The next chapter is called Beauxbatons and Durmstrang. I liked it, my boo.
I liked it a lot.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you're very Hugo. And if you're listening to this later and sleeping or going to sleep, and you're very cute and curled up and not curled up in the dark with your little iPad in your ears, I love you very much. I want you to go to sleep and have sweet dreams. And dream of me and dream of Harry. I love you.